Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Here we are back in our wheelhouse. Got a roster episode. The men's national team kicks off the 2022 World Cup cycle in 10 days. Brazil on September 7 at the Meadowlands, and then Mexico on September 11 in Nashville. Greg, good to be with you. How's it going?
Good, Bells. Good to be here. Good to look forward to some elite competition for what should be another young U.S. men's national team squad.
Yep, that's the report from Dave Sarakin, who remains the manager. Not sure about Mexico's roster yet, but Brazil is bringing Neymar, Coutinho, Firmino, Casemiro, and Fred, to name a few. So the thought that we might not get Pulisic, Brooks, and McKennie for these friendlies has been erased, in my head at least. What are you thinking?
I think that'll be the case for those three. I know every U.S. men's national team friendly roster is kind of a compromise, but definitely feel like those three, I don't know about Brooks, but I think there's no question Pulisic and McKennie will be getting these calls. But I do want to make sure that everyone's ready for the guy that they really want to see to be left off. And there's a bunch of reasons for it. It's not necessarily on merit or a coach doesn't rate a guy for these friendlies. There are just so many considerations your MLS guys, if there's an MLS guy you really want to see, they're still playing games. And I know they have a little mini break, but they have a bunch of games on the Saturday after, and it would just make for a really congested 10 days of soccer for guys who might be in the hunt for the Community Shield or for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple teams that come to mind as being really very much in the playoff hunt right now. Toronto is one of them. A bunch of national team players on that team. And then I think DC United.
Yeah, DC United is going to be really fighting for it. And then New York Red Bulls obviously are neck and neck with Atlanta for the Shield. So in any event, so they've got that in playoffs to think about. You can see why a manager wouldn't be thrilled to lose a player. I mean, at some point their hands are probably tied, but where there is wiggle room for a call up, you could see them trying to maybe dissuade Sarakin from taking one of their guys.
Yeah, I mean, by the letter of the law, there is no wiggle room. They must release players if they are called up in this sanctioned FIFA international break, but obviously reality is a little more complicated than that, and it's okay for the national team to work with the clubs and the teams.
Yeah, on the other side of the ocean, if your favorite European player doesn't get a call up, it could be the coach that Sarakin doesn't rate him for this, or it could be that it's in their best interest not to come play a couple of friendlies. That you essentially are taking 2 weeks of training away from a guy at his home club. That could be a big deal for somebody who's settling into new surroundings or right on the fringe of making an 18 or making a starting 11.
Eric Palmer Brown comes to mind.
Yeah.
There are others.
CCV obviously just landed at Swansea, so yes. It would seem foolish to then be like, okay, well, you just got there. We're not going to let the coach see you for 2 weeks because you're going to come play in this game against Brazil.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree on that one. Any other thoughts before we sort of jump into the who's going to be on this 23-man roster?
Well, so I know, and I've read a couple of these arguments for an Eric Palmer Brown call up. It's like, well, if they're not getting time with their current team, let's get them in the shop window. But I'm not really buying that either. I don't think anyone's scouting these games to any extent. No one's offering a contract based on how you do in a friendly for the U.S. national team.
Yeah, I mean, is the argument that the NAC Breda coach is going to see EPB in a USMNT friendly, and he's going to be like, oh yeah, never mind what I've seen in training for the last few weeks. He's a pretty good player. We're going to slot him right into the starting lineup.
Right. What have I done? The mistakes I've been making. If people were scouting these things, Tim Parker would have been playing for Real Madrid after we held France pre-World Cup.
Well, we can agree to disagree there. But You know, I think it is interesting that it raises an interesting point, which is didn't it used to be that if you performed really well in the World Cup, then you would, you know, to get all kinds of offers after the World Cup because maybe nobody had seen you, or here this guy breaks onto the scene. Suddenly he's a major transfer target when before the World Cup he wasn't. I think that those days are probably over, you know, never mind USMNT friendlies, but I'm just talking about like international performances in general. These scouts have databases of video clips of every player's every touch these days, you know, sortable by, you know, how much pressure they're under or like where on the field they are. You can figure out what you need to figure out about a player without relying on an international friendly.
Yes. Yeah. The days of like Andrei Arshavin or Roman Pavlyuchenko riding a really great Euro run to a $30 million payday, those days are probably over.
So
it's a shame. We lose some of that mystique, but yeah. No.
Yeah. Everything's become so scientific. Okay. Well, let's jump into this. The pool is being shaped. The first choice roster is going to start emerging. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I do think we're going to start to see sort of the shape it's going to take. I do think that I'm hoping there's room for quite a bit of experimentation still over these next three sets of friendlies. But I think the actual first team lineup will start to emerge.
Yeah, let's lay out what those friendlies are. So it's Brazil-Mexico coming right up, and then Colombia, maybe Peru?
Slash Peru, yeah. That's the word.
In October, early October, and then in November, we're going, the whole kit and caboodle's going over to Europe, and we're playing England and Italy. So a good slate of tests ahead, much better than what we had in the spring.
Yeah, plenty of reason to be excited to see what, again, it, by all accounts from what Sarakin's been saying, not too much reading between the lines required. It's going to continue to be extremely youth-oriented rosters.
Right. And I guess one last bit of preamble is, you know, I saw Fabian Johnson started and played well in a 2-0 win for Borussia Mönchengladbach. He scored a goal. He scored the second goal, and it was awfully nice. And, it, you know, a lot of people are come at us on Twitter and say, well, what about Danny Williams? What about Timmy Chandler? Nobody's saying what about Michael Bradley, but there may be some people thinking it. And I do still wonder if there isn't a place for those guys, Johnson, Williams, Chandler, and Bradley in particular, guys all close to 30 or 30 already. There isn't a place for them in the Gold Cup next summer, but we're going to kind of, based on what Sarakin is saying, that this is going to be a young roster again, and we're going to just going to leave them aside for the moment. Fair enough.
Yeah, we'll leave him aside, and I think Sarakin was diplomatic. It was, you know, there was a lot of focus on his conversations with Michael Bradley, and saying there might still be a place, but Bradley saying he understands that this is where we're at right now. I'm kind of hopeful that Sarakin is just sort of being diplomatic, and that, you know, I don't think you're ever going to sit across from Michael Bradley and be like, no, you're done. You're never going to get called in again, because it is still possible that those guys will be needed. But I think Sarakin's hopeful, and I'm hopeful that you leave them off long enough that other guy that you essentially learn that you don't need them anymore.
Right. Some other guys would really have to fall flat for Bradley to be like a justifiable call up, I think, next summer. The best case, enough with our worst case scenarios. The best case scenario is we don't need him ever again.
Right. Right. And not in Bradley's terrible way, just in a, he's 30, and hopefully these other guys render him obsolete.
Right.
Okay.
Let's
talk about those guys then.
Yeah. Let's start with goalkeeper. Who do you definitely want to see?
I definitely want to see Zach Steffen. I think that's what most people expect. I think he should be considered the number one right now. But it's a fickle position, and you're always sort of one howler away from people saying he can't be the guy anymore.
It's so unforgiving, isn't it? One mistake. Yeah, agreed. Steffen is the guy right now. And you know, after him, I just have a big fat question mark. I don't really, nobody would surprise me as a call up, and nobody would displease me. And I don't really have any strong opinions about it.
Right. My strong opinion is that I want Stephen to get 180 minutes in these two friendlies, because if he's going to have one of those howlers, or if we're going to start to see his limitations, these would be a couple of games where they might start to show up.
Mm-hmm. Because he's going to see some action.
Yeah, presumably Brazil will outclass us.
Yeah. I mean, let's just talk briefly about who else is even in the picture, I guess.
Sure, they're owed that.
Yeah, Bill Hamid is back at DC United. He's got some. He started on Sunday, yesterday, and played okay. I thought he had some nice saves. Ethan Horvath cannot get minutes at Bruges. Brad Guzan is well into his 30s, but you know, a good goalkeeper for Atlanta. Who else is there?
I'd say people are going to be talking about Alex Bono just because he's gotten some call-ups in the past, and you can sort of ride that inertia, even if you've had a couple of notable mistakes. So I think he'll be in the picture. Then I think you're getting into like Tim Melia, just a few other MLS goalkeepers who are having good seasons. A solid season in MLS will get you in the discussion. And then I've heard people talking about the young Klinsmann goalkeeper, but I don't really think that's a realistic call up, given that he hasn't been making rosters for Hertha Berlin.
Yeah, he's not even in the 18 yet.
Yeah,
for them. Okay, that's probably the most boring position in the whole lineup. Zach Steffen for 180 minutes, please, Dave. Right back. I'll tell you who I definitely want to see, and that is Reggie Cannon. Got the big shout-out from Chris Richards on Twitter a few weeks ago, and he definitely does look like a top five right back in Major League Soccer at the age of 20. He may be 21 now, I can't remember. Still very young. Good at a lot of stuff. Good at defending, good at getting forward. His final ball has been consistently dangerous. I'd like to see him. And I wouldn't even be mad if he starts over Yedlin.
Okay, so you would be mad if he starts, but you're not adamant that he start necessarily. You definitely want to see him on the list, though.
Yeah, I want to see him get called up. And I think I'd be really surprised if he isn't. You know, I mean, I don't have any inside info, but just looking around at what else is available, I'd be really surprised if Cannon isn't in this roster.
Okay, so anybody you definitely don't want to see then?
I don't want to see Eric Lehigh anymore. I think we may see him. You know, he got an assist over the weekend for Hull City. He's, what is he, 28 now?
Yeah, 28, 29 maybe.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for your service, but I just don't think it's necessary to bring him in, especially at the expense of Cannon or even possibly Shaq Moore.
Yeah, and I think Lehigh goes in with those other guys you mentioned up at the top of Fabian and Danny Williams, and they're guys that if maybe one or two of them show up, because you literally just don't have any other bodies to use. To get to 23 guys on a roster to have an actual camp, fair enough. But it would—I really do think it would be—it would seem like a waste if an Eric Lehigh is actually taking match minutes away from a Reggie Cannon or a Shaq Moore. So I'm expecting Yedlin to start as well, but that's even more reason to get some experience to the younger kids in the camp, like a Cannon or a Moore.
Yeah, I agree. And FC Dallas they don't really have a shot at the Supporters Shield. They're the top seed in the West right now. I don't know that there's like a huge argument for them to keep Cannon. So, and he wants to be there. He wants to join this Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Christian Pulisic dream train.
The more the merrier. All right, so let's get those guys in for right back.
So we saying Yedlin and basically Yedlin and Cannon.
Yeah, definitely. If Cannon doesn't get called and it's like Shaq Moore instead, I can live with it. But Shaq Moore, this is where I think the calendar difference between MLS and Europe probably plays in Cannon's favor. Shaq Moore hasn't played in a game yet, a competitive match at CF Royce. And Cannon's in, you know, he's been in season for 6 months. So this, I think, plays in Cannon's favor.
Yeah, very much in form, right back, right wing back. Bring him up.
All right, center backs.
Why don't you kick that one off?
All right, for me, it's we've got to start seeing Brooks and Miazga together. Miazga is now pretty well established at Nantes, it appears. He started their last two matches, so he's made his claim on that position. I don't think that taking away from not training for 2 weeks will change his status. He might have to wait a game when he gets back from traveling over the Atlantic Ocean. But I don't think it drops him in the pecking order to leave for 2 weeks. And then John Brooks started in the Bundesliga opener for Wolfsburg. Seems to be healthy. Obviously scores himself a goal. He's now our leading American goal scorer in the Bundesliga.
That might not be a short-term phenomenon either. He could end up being the top American scorer in the league this fall.
That is not in any way depressing. Let's get Brooks. Let's get Miazga. Let's throw him into the fire against Brazil. They've only played together a handful of times, I feel like. And, you know, for sort of the – a lot of people are assuming this is our center back pairing for the future. Let's find out, again, what their limitations are. Easy 1-2 for me.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. I think their limitation is already known, and it's that neither of them is all that fleet of foot. But they are our two best central defenders, and boy, oh boy, they're going to be a set-piece menace. I mean, two excellent headers of the ball on frame, on set pieces. After them, it gets a little more complicated and a little bit less exciting, I think.
I think there's some drama in the pecking order. So even just figuring out the pecking order, I think there's some intrigue there. But there are two guys I really don't want to see called up here, and that's Eric Palmer Brown and Cameron Carter-Vickers. And it has nothing to do with you need to be playing to warrant a call up. It's much more, I do think they'd benefit more from having the 2 weeks with their club. Mm-hmm. Eric Palmer Brown still hasn't jumped into the starting lineup for Nac Breda. And Cameron Carter-Vickers is literally probably getting to Swansea today. So, again, let's give him that.
He's on a little schooner. He's on a little schooner off the south coast right as we speak, wearing a Macintosh. Yeah, I agree with you. Let's not call those two up, the two acronym center backs.
Okay, so we leave the acronyms at home. And what's crazy is after Brooks and Miazga, I really don't know what the pecking order is right now. So those two kind of get lumped in, I think, as next choice. I know you're not as high on Cameron Carter-Vickers, but they're definitely in the discussion for 3 and 4 on the center back chart. But yeah, don't want to see him. Don't want to see him for this one. Anyone else you don't want to see?
Well, there's really no one I don't want to see. I mean, except I do agree with you about EPB and CCV. There's been rumblings that Aaron Long is going to be called up. I guess Chris Armas let it slip in an interview after the game last night. Aaron Long is Tim Parker's partner at center back for the Red Bulls. And I'm fine with that. Sure, let's bring him in, give him a look. Sounds like it's going to happen. And I know people have been calling for that for a long time. I think he's probably the smarter and more calm on the ball of the two between him and Parker.
Okay.
And a little bit better passer. There's also been a lot of Parker, you know, people saying Parker is underrated. Parker's really good at center back. I'm not quite there with that. Not buying that. I feel like he's a lot like CCV, except redheaded and 5 years older. Not a very reliable passer of the ball. But I think in both the case of CCV and Parker, we have acceptable depth at center back.
Okay, and, so you're not gonna call for Sarakin's head here if Parker and Long are both called up as sort of the depth options.
I think that's probably the most likely scenario, and I don't mind it.
Does it matter at all that we'll probably spend a lot less time with the soccer ball in these, at least in the first game, but potentially the second friendly as well against Mexico? Which center backs you'd want? Like if Long isn't, or if Parker isn't that clean of a passer, does that get minimized a bit? Because we're not going to have the ball much anyway against Brazil.
He's not going to have to pass it. Yeah. I suppose, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still want to see Miazga Brooks starting. I really hope that happens. I don't know what Wolfsburg's lobbying will be with Sarakin on Brooks, who, you know, Brooks has been injured a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's possible that they'll negotiate for him not to get called up, but I think it's going to be Miazga Brooks and then Parker Long behind them, and I'm basically okay with that.
All right, and I don't want to spoil next week's, where we actually talk about what we expect the lineup to look like, but it's not impossible to think that there will be a third center back in the starting lineup with Brooks and Miazga.
Yeah, I think we'd probably end up with left to right, Brooks, Miazga, Parker. I mean, if the France friendly was any indication.
Right. All right. Well, I wouldn't mind seeing Aaron Long or Parker. I kind of expect, I mean, we were now kind of assuming Long is getting called up. I have a couple other guys that I wouldn't mind seeing, and I kind of feel like this would be, I'm hoping, I kind of want the U.S. national team to sort of change its call-up methodology. I wouldn't mind seeing, like, Brandon Heinzeich, who's playing in Belgium, or, and this is a real long shot, like a Chris Richards. And it's not like you just got to jump on the hype train with a Chris Richards because he played in these Bayern Munich friendlies. I just think that it'd be cool if the U.S. started having a couple of more speculative call-ups for each of these friendly camps. It seems like a really high reward, like zero risk, high reward situation for me.
Yeah. I mean, so what's the main argument against it? It takes away from the chance to call up Long and Parker, who have sort of earned it.
Does it even do that? I mean, it's not like Sarakin can only call up 20 or 18 or 23. Like he could have 25 there. And you have Chris Richards in, and you get a look at him side by side with Parker Long. Same with Brandon Heinzeich. Like, get him in, take a look. And if it's clear that he's nowhere near the level, that's fine. That's what we've learned. And he sits on the shelf for a couple of windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I don't see any reason to argue against that. I just don't think it's going to happen. And you do kind of want, again, don't have any inside information, but maybe Richards is doing some really important work in Munich right now. His U19 side just lost on Saturday, their first loss of the season. Maybe he needs to like buckle down and stay on the trajectory that we hope he's on, which is, you know, to get in the roster for a cup match or something. Maybe a long Sure. shot, but if coming here for a ultimately meaningless call-up gets in the way of that at all, I would be against it. And yeah, no way to know for sure. But
right, yeah, keep taking those variables into consideration. And if not Chris Richards, then like somewhere on the roster, another sort of speculative call-up. But out of the 23, I think it would be kind of cool, or 24, however many bring into the camp, to have one or two guys that might not have might not be incredibly established pros. I don't know. I feel like some people are so cautious with their call-ups. They're like, he's got to show it for a full season that he can play. I'd prefer with friendlies, we kind of go the opposite route.
Yeah. Be a little more experimental, more aggressive. I'm good with that. I think what the center back discussion really raises for me is the reality that we need some guys to step up and be, you know, high quality third and fourth choices and push Brooks and Miazga too. And that's why, you know, that's why Richards, I think, is so important. If he does have the potential that he seems to have, he's one to keep an eye on for sure, whether he gets called up or not.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers. I've just in the last 2 minutes changed Richards to somebody I definitely want to see on the roster.
Wow. Speculative, Greg.
No, knowing full well that he's not like he's not in line for jumping to number one of the depth chart. But if his level at the camp is just he can't hang, then that's fine. You shelf him for a year and check back with him after a year at Bayern.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me.
All right. Left back. Tell us who your left back is, Bells.
Come as no surprise to anybody, but I'm picking Anthony Robinson as my first choice. Definitely don't want to see – who do you definitely not want to see?
I don't want to see anybody who's not named Anthony Robinson. That would be fine if we only called up one left back. Yeah. And then if he can't go, then Jose Gringo Torres comes in and plays left back for a game.
There we go. Throw Pulisic in at left back.
No, there's no reason at this point that anyone else should be getting those minutes, because it's the same as with Stefan. Like, this should be Robinson's until his limitations are exposed in a way that we realize it can't be Robinson anymore.
Yeah, what about Viafania?
Viafania's there. Viafania's available. If we throw Robinson in against Brazil and we find out like there's just this one little thing that he can't overcome, and turns out anyone can beat him anytime they want by doing certain things, we always have Viafania to be like, all right, well, we're back to Viafania.
Back to square Viafania.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, you know, you have a shout in here for Danilo Acosta at Real Salt Lake. And I saw a compilation of passes he made in RSL's 6-0 drubbing of the Colorado Rapids over the weekend. And it did remind me, like, I'm rooting for that kid, you know? He's got some things that would be nice on the national team. He's a good passer. He's very tough. I don't think he's there yet for a call-up for these friendlies. He hasn't, you know, he hasn't quite gotten out of Mike Petke's doghouse, for one thing.
But but the fact that he played his way back onto the field, because the first, 3 weeks of the season, he didn't play a minute, did he?
Yeah, he did not. Yeah, he was totally out of
it. So he's shown a little bit of resolve to have overcome that and gotten his way, again, at least halfway out of that doghouse. That's a good thing to know about a 19-year-old kid.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I'd put Acosta on there as another one who might be a little bit speculative, but I mean, he's a pro. He's playing professional soccer. He's not, you know, Chris Richards playing in the youth team. So if you know you're going to give the rest of the minutes to Anthony Robinson, I feel like there's a case to be made that the other guy you bring in for a little experience would be Danilo Acosta.
Yeah, that one makes a lot of sense to me, actually. I'm persuaded. Forget about Viafania. Send him. Is he at Portland yet, or is that deal?
He's at Portland, but he also, I think, might be kind of dealing with a little bit of an injury. So, again, another reason where it's sort of win-win to get Acosta in there.
Yeah, man, I feel the surge of realization coming over me. Thank you, Greg.
You bet.
Central midfield.
All right. So who do you want to see? Because I think you have more opinions on this than I do.
I definitely want to see Adams and Delgado at central midfield. And, of course, McKennie.
All right. But I don't think anybody listening was like, oh, I bet the first two names he's going to say here are Adams and Delgado.
Yeah. Here's my thing. This is kind of a long discussion, so I don't know how much we want to get into it, but
What are the people aren't here for anything? They're here for the discussion you're about to have. Bill.
We'll get to Donald Trump's response to the John McCain's death in a moment, everybody. Okay.
But first, Marky Delgado.
Marky Delgado. I know he hasn't had like a great season. He's had some injuries and he had a little bit of a bad run of form, I understand, through the early part of the summer. But by all reports, he's playing well again. And he compliments Adams and McKennie in a three-man midfield, I think, better than anybody else in the pool. And I'm getting to the point where I think we need to settle on Adams and McKennie as probably our six and our eight. Now, I've been critical of Adams, or I've at least expressed reservations about Adams as a six many, many times in the past, because I don't think his distribution is good enough, and I still worry about that. But Adams is so good at all the other stuff, all the off-ball stuff, that his on-ball limitations are probably not going to keep him from being the best six in the 2022 cycle, particularly if McKennie is an eight. I mean, if McKennie sort of settles into the six role, then that's different. But I think I want McKennie as an eight for now, so therefore I want Adams as the six. And those two are going to need a glue guy with them. You know, somebody who connects passes, who builds rhythm, as you have said many times, Greg, about Delgado. And so I really like that trio as my central midfield. Not to jump ahead to the starting 11 episode, but too bad. I just did.
No, that's interesting, and I'm okay with Delgado. You know, from whatever struggles Toronto has had as a program since the Champions League has ended, just on the strength of Delgado's other performance with the national team against Paraguay, like I would be totally fine with him getting called up. I would have no problem if I saw his name on the starting lineup. Now, again, Bells, this is all a bit wishful thinking. Because the guy you definitely don't want to see in central midfield is probably going to be starting in central midfield. Tell us, Bells. Tell us who you don't want to see in central midfield.
Christian Pulisic. He doesn't make sense. He doesn't make sense as a central midfielder. He didn't even play very well on the wing over the weekend for Dortmund, I didn't think. I didn't think he played well in terms of just understanding space and connecting passes and navigating tight situations. It's just not his game. And I don't think he should be there for the U.S. men's national team just because we ran up the score on Honduras and Panama in qualifying. I sound like a broken record here, but yeah, you're right. He's probably going to be the 10. Pulisic's probably going to be the 10. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's what's going to happen.
All right, now how about this, Bells? Because I want to at least throw a little new wrinkle then into your Pulisic hatred.
Hatred.
Yes, okay. Yes. And I'm obviously on record also saying Pulisic should be a winger. But if we're playing a formation that doesn't have wingers, is Pulisic okay to sit in the central? It's not like we're going to take him off the field. He needs to be on the field. But if we're playing wingbacks, he's not a wingback, then is it okay to play him ahead of like Adams and McKennie in a way that almost treats it like a 3-4-3, even though it'd be called a 3-5-2.
Yeah, where I mean, I
now
guess,
he's sort of a forward.
Yeah, I guess that's fine. I mean, if we're gonna go full France friendly in this Brazil friendly, and have a three man back line and totally bunker the whole time, which what do you think? Do you think we'll probably do that?
I'm expecting that. Yes.
So if we do that, then for Pulisic to play in the role that Julian Green played in probably makes some sense, you know, just sort of free to run all over the most advanced of the midfielders. Wasn't Green up, you know, formationally, if you did the graphic, he would have been up top with Wood in that game.
Right. Yeah.
So if that's where Pulisic plays, then I'm fine with it, I guess. But, you know, in the classic Tab Ramos 4-3-3, I don't want Pulisic in the middle.
That's where I'm at. I don't, if we have four defenders, then I don't want Pulisic to be in the middle, and I don't want him to be on. I don't want us to play with him and then two other forwards, because if he's on the wing anyway, we're getting too far into the into next week's. But yes, yeah, so Pulisic is somebody we don't want to see listed as a center mid, but we kind of expect it, and we'd be a little bit more okay with it if we're in a 3-5-2.
Yeah, if he's like a withdrawn forward or something, I think you've shouted that possibility before, and I'm okay with it. Michael Bradley's not going to be there. I think that's pretty clear from Sarakin's comments, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's someone who we don't have to list out. And my Bradley was on my definitely don't want to see list for a while. And it has nothing to do with animosity towards Bradley or the World Cup failure to qualify. It's strictly because we need to be running out some of these other kids.
Yeah.
The goal of the next coach should be to try to render Altidore and Bradley obsolete. That's what we need to be attempting to do.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're always in the back pocket and we can bring them in if no one else can do the job.
Easier. Looks like it's going to be easier to do with Bradley than it is with Altidore at the moment.
We'll see. We'll see once we get to that position on the field. Who would you not mind seeing?
Yeah, I think Trapp and Acosta, Kellen Acosta, wouldn't mind seeing. If Russell.
So I was just about to say, so I feel like there's been a bit of bad news in the holding mid spot. Trapp and Acosta I'm good with. Another guy we talked about for a while was Chris Durkin, and it seems like there was some bad news for Chris Durkin because he lost his job at DC United, but it's not necessarily bad news for the U.S. men's national team because his job was taken by another American.
Yeah, Russell Knews. So, you know, Durkin I thought played pretty well in his – he had, what, like 12 starts for DC while – Canoes was injured, and I thought he played pretty well, but his slow-footedness was a little bit of an issue, and DC was kind of a disaster most of that time too, pre-Rooney.
Yes.
And Canoes's return to health coincided with Rooney's arrival, roughly, and it's been a really good run of form for DC since those two have come on the field. At this point, they're one of the hottest teams in the league. They lost to Red Bulls yesterday, but easily could have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched looking for, you know, sort of an Adams versus Canoes dynamic to emerge, and it never really did. So I don't have a strong read on Canoes as a player. I know there are people who are high on him. That's about all I know.
I think anyone who's high on him is probably, again, just high on him getting a chance. I don't know that anyone's trying to thrust him into he is our starting six for 2022. It's just he should get a look. He should get a run out. And I'd be totally okay with that. I think Trapp has the inside track in Sarakin's eyes. But yeah, I wouldn't mind at all seeing if Canoes on the roster. It's kind of a shame that two of our potential future sixes are on the same MLS side trying to battle each other for minutes.
Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts. Maybe Durkin.
Sure.
Maybe Durkin will make a move sometime. So I wouldn't mind seeing Canoes. I would mind even less seeing Kellen Acosta, who, he's one of the few eights we have who is an actual threat to score goals. You know, he probably will get the call and see him again. And then, of course, Trapp. Trapp has been a regular call-up in the Sarakin era.
Yeah, so none of those guys would be surprising. Are there any guys who would be surprises that you wouldn't mind seeing?
No. Are there any for you?
Well, I was gonna say Keaton Parks I wouldn't mind seeing, but I'd be very surprised if his name is included based on his start to his season, just sort of him being in limbo for minutes.
Yeah, I mean, he's not really in limbo.
Yeah, he's pretty clearly not in the first team plan.
He's playing with Benfica B again, which is not a terrible place to be for a player of his age, but why wouldn't you mind it? I kind of would mind it if you were called up, honestly.
So do you mind? So I've got a whole like fucking long spiel here about, and it'll apply to Josh Sargent as well, because people always say, well, how can you include him if he's not even getting into the first team? But my, like, if you're going to assess a player, and they're in all these different environments, like it's, for me, it's like if you're going to measure how tall somebody is, so you stand them on you got a tape measure, you know, going up from the floor. You stand them on the platform with the tape measure, but right before they stand up there, you put like a 6-foot brick wall in front of the tape. So now they're standing behind a brick wall. You're only going to be able to measure how tall they are if they're over 6 feet. right? If they're not quite 6 feet, then you just don't see them at all. And you're like, I have no idea how tall the guy is. Well, it's like that with trying to assess these guys playing all these different teams, but all of the walls are different heights. So Keaton Parks is playing for Benfica. That might be like a, that wall might be 6 feet, 4 inches. So you're not going to be able to measure if he doesn't make the first team, you just don't see him. So he might be 6'3" or he might be 5'5". Like you don't know how good he really is. So he might be better than some other guys who are making first teams at clubs that are not as good as Benfica. And I think that is, I think you as a director, if an Ernie Stewart or the national, the next national team coach, I think those things should be considered. And I don't think you should have a dogmatic approach of, well, he's not even playing for his first team. He doesn't get a call.
Yeah, that's a good point. If Parks were getting regular starts at Malmo, for instance, he would probably be getting a call up. Or at least the typical fan would say he deserves to be called up.
Yeah, in the narrative, that's just such a completely different narrative. You know, think about the energy right now surrounding those guys playing for the Scandinavian teams compared to sort of the discouragement we're having with Keaton Parks.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, you've talked me into not minding seeing Keaton Parks too.
Yeah, and so for me, it'll be the same when we get to the forwards for Joshua Sargent.
You know, Sarakin knows what he has in Parks. He's had him in a camp. He even gave him some minutes. So it's not like he's not a complete mystery. So I guess we'll get a sense of whether Sarakin rates him or not if he calls him up.
That, to be honest, would be the reason I'd be super surprised to see Parks, because in the camp he actually went to with Sarakin, he did have a hard – he didn't get many minutes. So for me, that says Sarakin did get to look at him, doesn't quite rate him the way he rates even like Will Trapp at the moment, or as far as being useful to the team. So Parks really would surprise me.
Okay. All right, we've talked about the central midfield a lot. Let's move on to the wings. And this is a Scandinavian segment.
Yes, and it should be right now. So aside from the obvious, like we definitely want to see Pulisic out there, assuming we play with wingers. I think the other wingers I definitely want to see Eamon. Again, you won me over with Eamon to the point where I absolutely want to see this kid in a national team shirt to see what he's got. He's had a couple of highlights. I don't want to like set off any alarm bells for optimism, but the guy he reminds me of, just his body language, was Raheem Sterling.
Yeah. He moves his arms the same way.
Yeah. So I don't know if that means he'll be able to be as dangerous, but I'm promising that we now have an American Raheem Sterling. Romain Gall, I think people are excited about. He'll be in the discussion. And then you definitely want to see Gall called up. Is that right?
Yes. Definitely. Give it the softest definitely possible.
So what do you see in Gall that has you like, absolutely, I want to see this kid? Or is it just sort of that let's cast the wide net and Gall definitely falls in the net?
It's a combination of the two. There are not a lot of great wing options in the pool, something we've talked about before. I mean, Paul Areola comes to mind, but he doesn't even play on the wing for DC right now. He plays in the middle of the pitch. And we kind of know what he offers, and DC is in a tooth-and-nail playoffs fight right now. Other than Areola, you know, there's like Rubio Rubin comes to mind, but, you know, he didn't really move the needle, I didn't think.
So you're talking about the guys we kind of already have in the cupboard, like guys we've already seen a little bit of?
Yeah, none of them just compels me to say, no, they should be called up and Gall should stay in Sweden. Gall had a brace over the weekend in a blowout win for Malmo. If you haven't looked up those clips, you should. They're both really nice goals. As we talked about before, he's signed by a team that was, at the time he was signed, in the Champions League hunt. They've since been bounced, but he is immediately in their plans. The best club in Sweden. I think at this point we should call him up and just get a look at him for sure.
Sure. At least measure him a little bit and see what he's made of. I'm with you on that. And I think, you know, if you're going to call up Gaul and you're going to call up Aemon, where do you stop if you're looking over Scandinavia? Like, we've got Emmanuel Sabi there scoring goals. Mm-hmm. Do we call him up too, or do we only give two out of the three a call up?
Yeah, I think if you call up one, you have to call up all three.
They're going to carpool. You need to get them all together.
Yeah. I mean, probably in order of urgency, I would say Gaul, Aemon, Sabi. Sabi plays for the worst team of the three. And, you know, while he has scored goals, he's shown some of his limitations. You know, if you're following some of the people on Twitter who gif this stuff and make videos, I think Joe Lowry had a good thread on Sabi's limitations as well as his strengths. Aemon is just recently back from injury, so there's a little bit of an argument that he should be, you know, it makes more sense for him to stay with his club and reestablish himself, even though he did get to start over the weekend. Gaul is, I think he's 23. Is he 23 or is he 21? Can't remember.
Gaul's 23. Yeah.
He's a little older than the other two and a little bit more, I think, has shown to be a little bit more successful. So if I have to give an order there, I would say Gaul, Aemon, Sabi.
Okay. And the guy we've kind of left off here from Belgium is Kenny Seff, who I think we were kind of expecting him back to start easing back from injury, but still hasn't made an 18 for Anderlecht. And so at this point, it seems really unlikely, even if he gets onto a roster for Anderlecht in the next week, that it'd be worth either easing him back from injury. No reason to immediately ship him over the ocean and play a friendly.
Right. Yeah. Now, you pointed out earlier that we may not be playing with wingers at all against Brazil, you know, and in that case, maybe there is a stronger argument for bringing Paul Areola in, or maybe a Lyndon Gooch or Julian Green. You got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so for me, the guy who that one of these Scandinavians jumps up, and that's Sabi. At least based on the lineups I've seen posted for his games before, sometimes he plays out wide in like a 4-4-2, but sometimes he plays as one of the forwards in a 4-4-2. So I think Sabi would fit into a 3-5-2 pretty easily, maybe more easily than like an Aemon would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So maybe Sabi over Aemon for you?
No, I want all three. Okay. I want to see all three of them called up. Like, there are no Americans in MLS that interest me at all at this point, other than Areola. I think Areola belongs in that discussion. But no one else under the age of 25 is really playing consistently.
Yeah.
Am I missing somebody?
Well, you know, we haven't really talked about Gooch, and who's at League One, playing pretty well for Sunderland. And Julian Green, I mean, we're kind of, in my opinion, we're kind of, when we start talking about those guys, we're just kind of like, we're on the margins, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Gooch, I think, he kind of has some Novakovic and currency where if you're going to play in a league that's way below, then you had better like run all over that league. And Gooch is definitely doing that.
Yeah. He's got 3 assists, I think, through 4 or 5 games. So I don't.
Julian Green, pretty indifferent too. But there's no MLS players, are there, that we're missing that play in attacking spots and are under the age of 25, 26?
No, not really. I mean, the only US eligible players who even come to mind are Gianluca Busio and Andrew Carlton, and they do not deserve call ups to the national team. I think that's pretty clear.
They need to get to Scandinavia where they can start loading up on goals.
Yep. Go to Hobro IK, bro.
That's terrible. That's our winger pool. Strikers.
Who do you definitely want to see?
So Weah is a no-brainer to be on this roster. I don't imagine PSG will have any issues letting him go. I don't think that he needs to get more time at PSG to prove himself. He's not above any of the players above him at PSG, and no amount of training sessions is going to put him above them.
Right.
So I think Weah, the question becomes, does he play as a striker or is he a wide player in like a 4-3-3? I think he can play either, but if we're going 3-5-2, I would expect him to start up top. So I think we'll see him listed as a striker.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good with that. And I mean, he didn't make the roster over the weekend, which is, you know, understandable given who's in front of him, but just something to note. He's not been in every roster this season for PSG.
Yeah. Yep. It looks like that could start to be his, and again, hopefully that's not sort of a permanent thing, that he'll bounce in between, game day rosters. So
he will almost certainly.
All right, so we want to definitely see Weah. Anyone else you definitely want to see called up as a striker?
Not really. I mean, we'll get into some of the names of people that I think would be fine, but there's nobody else who makes a strong argument for himself at the moment. You got to have two more, so there will be two more. But
all right, well, who do you definitely not want to see listed as one of those two?
Why don't you tell me who you definitely don't want to see?
I don't want to see any of the MLS sort of placeholders that we've had in the past. And that would be Sapong. That would be Dom Dwyer. Even Jazzy Zardes. Like, I don't think those guys should be at – I think they're all 26, 27. I think we have to just concede that they'll never be there. They'll never be at that level for us. And so the only time to call them in is – when you can't get enough other players who are currently playing first team soccer. And given the success, the early season success, even in second sort of tier leagues in Europe, of some guys, I think we've got to be calling in those guys rather than any of the MLS contingent.
Just because of their age and.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree to agree. So the players we wouldn't mind seeing, what do you think of Josh Sargent? Should we call him up? Hasn't made a roster for a first team roster for Bremen yet.
They've only had two. Yeah, I think Sargent for me is worth a call up based purely on the fact that we can't assess him accurately because it's not easy to break into a Bundesliga team. And two, he had good performances for the U.S. in his last call-ups. So I think on the strength of his performance in the last call-ups, it's worth it to have him in again. Okay. Novakovic doesn't necessarily just jump him just because Novakovic is playing first team soccer in Holland.
Right. Novakovic did have a good goal the other last weekend. So.
Yep, and that's great. But again, if you're Dave Sarakin and you had both those guys in camp, 3 months ago, was it 3 months ago even? If you clearly rated Sargent then, do you drop Sargent just because of their current club situations, or do you trust that Sargent's still a better player?
Yeah. Good point. And yeah, Sargent is behind some good players at Werder Bremen, including the all-time leading non-German goal scorer in the league's history, Claudio Pizarro. So I think he's being brought along thoughtfully by the North German club.
And yep, and that's why I also don't buy into leaving Sargent there to fight for minutes. I know people kind of say that, and while I did say it for Palmer Brown and CCV, Sargent isn't an unknown commodity at Bremen. Like, he's been there since what, January?
Yep.
Like, they have measured him. They know where he stands, and him leaving for 2 weeks isn't going to change that.
Right. And he's banging in goals in the fourth division for Bremen, Werder Bremen 2. Had another one over the weekend. 3 goals in 5 appearances. That's a hit rate that I think is probably acceptable for a striker.
So wouldn't mind seeing Sargent.
Okay. Yeah, you have me convinced. What about Bobby Wood?
I actually do want to see Bobby Wood. I probably could have had him in the definitely want to see. I'm excited for Bobby Wood's season, to be honest. I think Hanover looked like they could actually score some goals, and I think Bobby Wood will be a good contributor to their success, whether he's actually picking up the goals and assists or whether he's just doing little odds and ends for them around the edges. I'm excited for the season, Bobby. I think he's going to have a much more successful season than last year. So I'd like to see him. I think he's good for the national team. He's one of my favorites. I just feel like he does whatever the team asks him to do.
Yeah. So we're talking Weah, Sargent, Wood, and if Novakovic gets called up, fine. If he doesn't, fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping to see four forwards on the call-up list. And it makes sense if we're going 3-5-2 to have four forwards in camp.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll sign up for that.
We didn't mention Jozy Altidore's name yet. Do you think he's getting called up, or do you think he's in the same boat as Bradley with respect to TFC trying to make the playoffs still and just sort of hoping that we won't need Altidore anymore?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be in this lineup or in this roster. Again, I have no idea what Dave Sarakin's actually thinking or what the next manager might be thinking. You know, there was that rumor a couple weeks ago that Altidore was headed back to Europe. You know, that would sort of change the dynamic a little bit because he's only 27. He'd be an early 30s striker in 2022. He'll be very much in his 20s for the Gold Cup next summer. I don't think he's out of the picture yet, but not in the picture for these friendlies, I guess, is the long and short of it.
Yep, agreed.
All right. We'll get into the lineup for the Brazil game, which has its own sort of parameters and dynamics next week and when we know who Sarakin actually called up. But for now, let's take a break and we'll come back with some short corners. Had this good feeling when I got up today, like everything was cool, so I went on my way. I guess I walk with a box, so then it's profiling cop. Now wait a minute, dear, yo, don't tell me to stop. So then it's profiling cop, with his profiling ass. Figured the best thing he could do was find a cat to harass. The little kitten was me, not that one in the tree, the black one with the promise and the wish to be free. I mean, damn police, man, can't you leave me alone? I'm a prince, plus important, plus this business I'm on. See this racket I'm in, it needs somebody like me. All of us is concentrating on the things that we see, how much we make. So you... All right, we're back. A lot happened over the weekend. Let's start with a Bundesliga recap. I want to start with something we don't have planned because you mentioned it in the last segment. Did you watch the Hannover versus Werder Bremen game? Any of it?
No, I didn't get to. I was on the road traveling and wasn't able to watch it.
Okay, I didn't either. I was just wondering if you saw anything that made you particularly excited about Bobby Wood's future. But
I watched the highlights, like a 3-minute highlight of Hannover versus whoever they played in the DFB Pokal, and they just ran riot for like 6 goals. And I was like, that's more goals than Hamburg scored last year. So that's what made me excited. And Wood was involved in a couple goals. They got another guy, Waydont. I don't know who he is, but they signed another forward, who I think is young, and I think there's probably a lot more excitement in Hanover's base for this guy than there is for Bobby Wood. He scored 2 goals in like 15 minutes after coming on in their DFB Pokal match, and he scored the goal in the Bundesliga opener.
Okay.
But Wood was involved in both of his goals in the cup game. He had, I think, the direct assist for one of them, and he had a nice layoff for a cross that led to the other one. And again, they were running 6-1 up at that point, so it's not a big deal. But it's just Bobby Wood is just such a selfless player, and I think that bodes well for how he's going to be received there. That's sort of the Hanover line I'm drawing after one game of Bobby Wood playing.
Yeah, no, and it's good. You know, it's a good sign for Hanover that I think they got an away point at Werder Bremen, who is projected to be slightly above average Bundesliga side. And Hanover's prospects aren't, generally speaking, viewed as being that good this season. So for them to go get a point on the opening day on the road at a team that's supposed to be better than them is a good sign. BVB Dortmund beat Leipzig 4-1.
That's a great start for a new manager.
Yeah, man. The score flatters a little bit. I thought the game was a lot more even than that.
First half was really drab, wasn't it?
It was pretty drab. I mean, Leipzig's press in the first 15 minutes had Dortmund completely undone. Leipzig scored in the first minute, I think, and Dortmund couldn't barely get out of their own half. But their new signing, Axel Witsel, the
Belgian,
the blue-eyed Belgian, he was massive. Personally took control of that game over the course of the first half, and then scored the goal on the set piece, you know, sort of the overhead kick from 2 yards out that I think made it 2-1. And Dortmund never looked back. I thought so a couple things I take from that. I know I'm just kind of chattering here, but two things I take from that. One, Witzel signing is going to make BVB a much better team, and that's going to be good for Pulisic. I think he will get his chances to pad his stats, and he will get his stats because they're going to beat up on lower table Bundesliga sides. They look like a team that's going to just control games with Witzel and Daoud. Daoud and Witzel seem like they work together in the middle pretty well.
And they didn't have that last year. Last year, they just looked so incoherent.
They were shambles. Just
being more organized, will put Pulisic potentially in way more opportunities to do his Pulisic stuff.
Yeah. So that's the good news on the Pulisic front. A little more good news is he had the assist before the assist on that corner kick.
Because he takes the corners. He takes the corners now, right?
Yeah, he took them all yesterday. He hit Delaney right on the forehead, and Delaney slammed it on frame, and then it was a nice save from the keeper, and that's when Witzel put it away. Pulisic drew a lot of fouls, but other than those two things, I thought he had a pretty bad game. He didn't look great, and then Jadon Sancho came on and played a just absolutely gorgeous assist to Marco Reus for the sort of icing on the cake in the late minutes of the game. So he might be Pulisic might find himself in a battle for playing time. Obviously, there's no reason to worry about that. He's going to get plenty of minutes, but he needs to be better.
So he's not going to be he's not necessarily going to be the star attacker at Borussia Dortmund. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, he's definitely not right now. I mean, Royce is the star, and Sancho is more dangerous in limited minutes than Pulisic has been, I think.
All right, so maybe Sancho will get all the talk about getting sold off for 100 million, and Pulisic will just remain there.
Wouldn't be shocked.
All right. No, I want to get to Weston McKennie versus John Brooks, because what a great way to start the season for American fans. It's going to – man, Bundesliga every weekend, you're just going to want to be checking to see who's playing where and when.
Yeah.
McKennie started, which wasn't a guarantee. I mean, certainly wasn't a guarantee, so that's a great – started and went 90. Mm-hmm. So that's really positive. And I would say just from the limited amount of time I've been able to watch McKennie, like, he doesn't make a ton. He never seems to make a bunch of mistakes. I know you worry about his looseness in possession, but there are times where even his giveaways, they're not necessarily like loose giveaways. He thought he could thread a pass, or he thought he recognized a through ball, and they're almost like you can almost even see his mind sort of clicking, even with some of his giveaways.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think, you know, he had a poor touch in the first 5 minutes in the middle of the field that forced him to foul somebody, you know, to prevent a counterattack. So I just noticed that he has like one or two of those every game.
It'd sure.
Be nice to see him just have a game where he doesn't have any of those, which is a high bar, I recognize. I thought he played pretty well. I thought McKennie played pretty well for Schalke. Schalke looked bad overall. They're not.
Did they look any worse than they did last year? Because last year was like the same thing. They never look like that. They're never a free flowing team. They limit mistakes and find ways to claw out 1-0 wins.
Yeah, that's been their MO. And they, you know, they kind of got Schalke'd yesterday by Wolfsburg. I thought Wolfsburg was a slightly better team, and
And when you have great goal scorers like John Brooks.
Yeah. Well, so before we get to Brooks, one last thing on McKennie is, I mean, I've talked about that looseness in possession before. I think the other thing he needs to start doing for Schalke is bring order and rhythm to the middle of the field for them, because they are, and maybe that's a job that's too much for one man, but it's just too chaotic in there for them. It was yesterday. They could never, nobody was ever stepping on the ball and just, you know, making something happen. And that could be partly a result of the way football is played in Germany right now. It's just all this counter pressing and canceling each other out. you know, sort of what Schalke specializes in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe it'll never happen, but it would, if I turn on the game next weekend and I see McKennie, you know, bringing harmony to the game on the ball for his side, that'll be a really big deal, I think.
Well, I think if he doesn't,
they have a lot of competition at midfield, and the latest reports are they're going to sign Sebastian Rudi from Bayern Munich, a holding midfielder of great quality. So there's like seven people in there fighting for playing time.
Yeah, and I feel like they need an upgrade, and then it's going to be McKennie's job, because essentially what I feel like is, like, I want McKennie to be playing with a better center midfielder than the one he's playing with. Like, yeah. So I'm hopeful that McKennie's not the one who's dropped, and so he benefits by being in a higher level center midfield.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit like Adams, he does a lot of stuff off the ball that's really good. He's so good in the air. Somebody, Joe Lowry again, put a GIF thread up this morning of McKennie winning the ball in the air and finding a teammate's feet.
Oh, with his head, right?
Yeah.
Like finding little flicks or just the direction of his header. Yeah. So he has these really good ideas that he takes almost no time to decide on and execute.
Yeah. It's great. That's why I love him so much.
So he's for sure going to bring harmony to a midfield against Brazil. That's the key. and I mean that seriously. I really do think that in a game where harmony for the U.S. will be hard to come by, I'm really hoping that McKennie's level is such that he gives us a little bit of that. But yeah, McKennie, no matter what, wasn't able to overcome John Brooks's finishing prowess. Really great to see Brooks getting to start. Again, we expected him to, because he'd been starting in preseason. They'd paid a lot of money for him last year. It's just always a question mark after being missing an entire year of what your level is when you return.
Right. And his level was good. I mean, he had the one glaring mistake in the second half where he kicked Breel Embolo in the face and and gave up a penalty and got a yellow card that could have been a red probably. But he also scored the goal, ghosted onto the back post on a corner kick and knotted it downwards. I love the way a German center back heads the ball into the ground.
If only they had been able to do it in the World Cup.
I know.
So you assume that kicking people in the head is a pretty easy mistake to eliminate from your game. And it's his attacking ability, while we kind of are joking about it, could very well be vital to U.S. success going forward.
I mean, he and Miazga lining up on corner kicks is going to be tough to defend, I think, you know? I mean, Miazga had 4 goals last season on set pieces. So I think that's great. I'm excited mm-hmm. about that. And I thought Brooks had a good game even outside of that. You know, Wolfsburg's defense was very, very tough to break down for Schalke.
So, not without exaggerating, like, Brooks potentially will be the best central defender the U.S. has had. Can we just say in our lifetime, like, when was the last time we had a excellent, like, Bundesliga level defender? Cirundolo, but I'm talking center backs.
Wasn't Bocanegra a Premier League starter for a while?
Yeah, he was in in and out of Fulham's lineup.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah, I think you're right. Brooks is probably the guy.
And part of that, this is sort of tinged with center backs were kind of asked to do different things back then. So any modern full center back probably has the advantage footballing wise over center backs of yore.
Yeah.
Nyewu's at AC Milan for a spell.
But didn't play that much, right?
No, never really played.
Brooks is one thing I like about him is he looks like he's not very worried out there, you know. He just very calm. Doesn't trouble himself.
That's your favorite type. That's your type. I think when we talk about like players' demeanors, like you've got a type that you're looking for, and it's that untroubled type.
Yeah, I'm for it. Give me the swagger.
All right, so that was Brooks and McKinney facing off. Bobby Wood and Josh Sargent didn't face off in their face-off.
No. That was it. That was the face-off. Should we talk about Fabian Johnson a little bit? I mean, we mentioned already he had a nice goal.
Give Fabian some love.
Gladbach had that 2-0 win, and he combined elegantly with Rafinha, I think, on a 1-2-1-2, a 1-2-3-4.
Yeah, watch that goal. If you haven't watched that goal yet, watch that goal, because it is sort of some poetry in the box.
Finished by Johnson, side foot, sliding. Not the world's most difficult finish, but, you know.
No, the build up combined with the finish is what makes it. Yeah. It's an elegant goal.
Okay.
Real quick on Johnson, like, like the Danny Williams and like even Alfredo Morales, I think, played 90 in a Bundesliga game over the weekend, mm-hmm. Holding mid, who has never really made noise for the national team. Like Williams, Morales, those guys, it's hard to imagine they'll really be in the picture for the U.S. Johnson could be an exception, because if you're going to stay in the picture at age 31, 32, you really need to have been like one of the best players on the team when you were in your prime. And Johnson definitely is in that category. Johnson in his prime was one of our best players. He might have been our best player at the 2014 World Cup,
right?
Before he got hurt. So if any of those guys like have a shot, maybe it could be Fabian Johnson.
Yeah, and I hear that. And if he, you know, if he has a little bit of a resurgence at Gladbach, then all the more reason. He, that's a regular contender in the Bundesliga for the top four. And, you know, he plays in front of a gigantic crowd in prosperous Western Germany. I think that means something. And he started the first game of the season and scored a goal.
So I wouldn't mind if Fabian Johnson has a role to play next summer, you know, whenever. I really like watching him play too, and that goal didn't do anything to change my mind.
Right. Yeah, glad you mentioned Morales too. Started and went 90 at Dusseldorf, and they lost, I believe, 2-0.
You're not making a connection between those two things, but that's what happened.
No, just facts on facts. Let's skip. We were going to talk about Tyler Adams versus Russell Knauss, but I don't really have anything to say about it. So, unless you do, I guess you do have something to say about it. You noticed something about the way they were set up.
Well, because people are putting Knauss's name out there now for U.S. consideration, and it's always in the role of a six. And there's, you know, the ongoing discussion about whether Adams should play for the six for the U.S. But neither one of those guys necessarily plays the six alone for their club teams. DC and Red Bulls both kind of play with two holding mids, so you don't get a pure sense of what it would look like if your idea is to run 1-6 with like the 4-1-4-1 that mm-hmm. Sarakin's been running. You don't necessarily get a sense of what that would look like with those guys for their clubs. So not that neither one of them warrant a look as a lone six for the U.S., but it's you can't get an exact look at it during their MLS games.
Yeah, because Knauss was in a double pivot essentially with Ulysses Segura, I believe.
Yeah, so he's almost always, Knauss looks like he's always sort of responsible for width-wise, like two-thirds of the field, and sort of overlaps the center of the field with his other holding mid, and then he seems to be shifted out to the right.
Yeah.
Slightly.
Well, I guess we'll find out more about all these guys in the next few weeks. Moving right along, I want to bring up sort of the second wave, not second wave feminists, but second wave USL youngsters.
They may well be second wave feminists.
They could be. There's, you know, earlier in the season, I spent a lot of time thinking and talking about Richie Ledesma, Alex Mendez, Andrew Carlton, George Bello, Gianluca Busio, who has since made his MLS debut, a bunch of those guys, Uli Yanez. There's kind of been a changing of the guard in terms of teenagers in USL getting minutes, and the new crop is Brendan Aaronson, a central midfielder at Philadelphia, playing for the Bethlehem Steel. He's kind of a number 10. Ethan Bryant, who is also an attacker for San Antonio FC. Azriel Gonzalez and Alfonso Ocampo Chavez, both at the Seattle Sounders. And then the one that I want to really talk about is Joshua Atencio, who is a number 6 for the Sounders. Sounders 2. He's 16 years old, and he made his first USL appearance on Wednesday and his second on Saturday. Came in for a cameo on Wednesday and then started on Saturday, and he looks really good to me. More intriguing than any of the other names I just mentioned. He didn't seem to be affected by pressure. Game just looks like it comes easy for him. Positive first touch, clever passer, and works hard off the ball. He's eligible to play with the U17, so he's a lot younger than some of the guys we were talking about earlier in the summer. And I'm all of a sudden kind of excited about him. Doesn't look like a 16-year-old at all out there.
What's his frame like? And this isn't like the American, like, is he too small to play it? I'm just curious if he's whether he is so good that he can essentially play without some of those more traditional tools that show up in the US game.
Yeah, he's pretty big. He doesn't look super fast, but I haven't looked up his height, but I would guess he's at least 5'11". Maybe a little taller than that. Looks like an adult out there. Isn't moving too fast, but just, you know, every touch is kind of like into space, and he's looking to spray it to the wing or even combine quickly. I was really impressed, really impressed. And I saw a little bit of that Jonathan Gonzalez tactical alertness in defending too. Like he would be sort of hanging out on the edge of the frame of the television. He'd see like somebody about to make a bad touch, and then he would pounce, you know. And he was working hard to get back behind the ball. Not match fit. Definitely looked gassed after about 40 minutes, and was taken off in like the 63rd on Saturday.
Okay. Well, you got to keep tabs on these guys for us, Bells, because again, for the U.S. to even put a squad together for 2022. The guys are talking about now will be 20 to 22 years old. So they will be a couple of these guys will be on the roster.
Yeah.
At the next World Cup. Maybe not the guys you just named, but just people in their cohort will be in the discussion.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody has a chance of it out of this whole discussion, it's Richie Ledesma. And I feel like Atencio has replaced Ledesma for me as the most exciting American teenager in USL.
Because Ledesma's gone from USL, right?
right. Ledesma and Mendez turn 18 on September 6th, and I think we can probably expect some kind of announcement from both of them shortly thereafter.
All right, good for them.
Not that they're, and it won't be that they've committed to play for UC Santa Barbara.
Not good for UC Santa Barbara.
Anything else?
No. Let's get to the roster announcement, Sarakin. Let us know.
All right, that's Sunday, and we'll do a Brazil preview early next week, and then we'll be burning the midnight oil the night of the friendly, which is September 7th, a week from this coming Friday, and we will hopefully have an episode out early Saturday morning. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Greg. We'll see you.